ComicBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookBookB joining me here on this Tuesday, September 3rd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 5 hour and 10 minutes or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here after that long 3 day holiday weekend for everybody, which kind of signals sort of the end of summer. And it does make sense here as the NFL gets underway in a couple of days, starting to feel like fall out there for a lot of people. So we got plenty of football stuff to talk about here on today's show. We'll start things off with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. We'll talk with him about his thoughts and observations from week one of the college football season, looking ahead to week two here, which begins on Friday. But we'll spend the majority of our time with Brian talking about the NFL as that season gets underway on Thursday night. Second half of today's show, we'll chat with professional handicapper Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. We'll talk college football and NFL with him as well, including Vanderbilt versus Purdue, LSU versus Texas, Miami versus North Carolina, and some of his week one NFL thoughts. Over at BangTheBook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff going on over there right now at the website. I posted my week two college football situational betting tips piece earlier this morning. Yesterday, I posted my college football power ratings, as well as my opening line reports for both college football and the NFL. Definitely seen some movement here as, look, sharp bettors do not take holidays off. They did not take Monday off. We saw some moves in both college football and the NFL, so you always want to be paying attention to that type of stuff. We cover a lot of those different types of things over at bangthebook.com. We got a couple of soccer previews for you for the Champions League as well as the Europa League from Admir Aljic, so make sure you head on over and check those out. I'll preview this weekend's NASCAR races probably here this afternoon. We'll have some stuff coming up for you later on in the week with college football and NFL system picks, picks of the week, totals of the week, all kinds of good stuff going on over at the website. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today. We fire things up with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
All right, Adam, it's time. Let's go, man.
Yes, sir. You don't have any free Sundays now for a very long time. I know you and I were talking about that a little bit, actually, this past Sunday. But you know what, man? We wouldn't have it any other way in this business.
No, you're right. It's funny. You know, you laugh, and I even say it to Chuck Esposito at Sunset Station. I shouldn't say this too loud, but honestly, there's nowhere I'd rather be with all the games on. And if you come to Vegas, folks, if you're out there, you're coming in. We have a great Sunday football watch party in the showroom Club Madrid at Sunset Station. But all the games are on. It's in proximity to the book. You've got the apps now, Adam, and literally – it's action morning, noon, and night, and you know the NFL's awesome. Let's cut to the chase. The funny thing,
yeah,
is, buddy, I was
go
just
going
to say real quick. It's been about 6 years now, I guess, that I've been doing this thing on Sundays out there. And in the past, I had the Sunday ticket thing, and I would much rather be doing what I'm doing, because when I'd have the Sunday ticket, and I wanted to focus. I like the Bills a lot, so I focus on the Bills. Well, the Bills game go to commercial. All right, I'm going to scan around the league. I swear to God, you go to the other seven early games, and you're flipping around. They're all in commercial at the same time. I mean, yeah, I'm like, I'm done with that.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It's certainly a great atmosphere for watching football in any of the sports books out there, but definitely there with you with that watch party there at Club Madrid. And before we get into the NFL, which, you know, I know is obviously your passion between the two types of football that we talk about here on the show, let's take a look at the college football market for a minute. Week one in the books. Last night, the final game, Notre Dame takes out Louisville 35-17. The Cardinals do get that cover, though, for anybody that took the plus 19, really any number that was out there on that game. But with week one in the books, Brian, any observations, anything that you picked up on that you want to share with our listeners here going into week two?
Well, I think it's another college football season. I mean, the bad beats are all documented. Everybody talks about, the bad beats in the Northwestern game and the bad beats in the Oregon-Auburn game. Yes, I mean, if you had the right opinion and you lost, I'd rather have right side losers and talk about a bad beat than not having a clue. But the reality of it is the bad beat's a bad beat. Well, half the people won. You know, I mean, so there was the lucky win side of it. Nobody ever called it that. It's just, it's the bad beat. But the odds makers do a terrific job. And I think that's pretty prevalent. Again, you look at the Oklahoma game the other night, the first half total, you get a field goal at the last second, like with 20 seconds to go with Houston. And, okay, there's the side, they cover, and the game's going to stay under the total. They kick a squib kick. Two plays later, Oklahoma gets a chip shot field goal, and the kid misses it. His second field goal he misses, or the game would have, the first half would have gone over. So, you know, the books are going nuts with all these plays. So, you know, the odds makers are all over it.
Yeah, and that's the thing about college football. And I think that, you know, this is something that we've come to expect here in week one. It's sloppy. There are a lot of turnovers. And also, there were a lot of teams that blew fourth quarter leads in week one. And, you know, again, you just want to put all this context, you know, into the proper mindset here of you will have some right side losers. You will have some wrong side winners, probably more frequently in college football than you will in any other sport. But you don't want to overreact to what you just saw. And also, you want to keep in mind, you know, there are some teams that probably would have won the game if they weren't minus four in turnover margin. There are some teams that would not have had a prayer if they weren't plus three in turnover margin. These are the things you have to factor in with college football.
Listen, there's nothing drives me more crazy than coaches mismanaging games, helping with a goofball decision. Well, what was Malzahn doing? He doesn't go for two. They don't go for two. And Oregon gets the Hail Mary into the end zone would have beat him. That drives me nuts. But you know what? The players, I think, the betters, make some of the same decisions. Like, a good buddy of mine, we're having this healthy debate. He says, oh, the Oklahoma game, you know, the quarterback from Oklahoma, what's the kid doing in there throwing the ball with 14 seconds left on the play clock? And like, that's got to be part of your handicap. It's like preseason football where you're handicapping the fourth quarter. In games like that, or games that are going to get away, the backdoor cover is always in play, but the total is always in play. And the reality is when you look at some of these games, even if you wanted to say the Oklahoma-Houston game, but even the bigger games like Clemson, when those games are big blowouts, the underdog is going to keep their starters in. And there's a dose of respectability for them at the end of the game. But the backups are going to come in. It's like a preseason game. The bigger the spread, if you get a 24-point spread, the backups are going to be in for the big favorite if they've got the big lead. The other team's starters will remain in to give the game a dose of respectability. And as you saw with the Oklahoma game, like, well, why did the kid throw the ball with 14 seconds left on the play clock? It's because he wants that kid, a freshman, to get a taste of it and know how to run the offense the way they want to run the offense so that when his day comes, he's gotten a taste of experience. These are things deep, deep, deep into games you have to factor in when you're handicapping on the front end.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, and especially at this time of year. I mean, unless it's a marquee type of game with maybe some college football playoff implications, like in LSU-Texas or, you know, in Oregon-Auburn, something like that, these teams aren't going to sit on the football. They're not going to sit on the lead. They're going to run their offenses, whether it's with the starters or with the backups, because they need to get into midseason form. They don't get preseason games to work out all the kinks. So, you know, even though you get a second-half blowout or something like that, you may still get a lot of points in that second half. The over may still come through simply because these coaches are running their offenses. They're not taking a foot off the gas. You don't do that until later in the year when these games start to matter a lot more. You don't worry about, you know, anything here at this time of the year except for getting those reps in. So you definitely have to keep that in mind. Even if the game looks like a blowout, in the second half, it may still be played at the same tempo and the same pace that the first half was.
Well, and I would make the case, not every game, it depends who's playing, how the game was going. I would make the case that the over is more likely because of all the reasons we just documented. I'll give you one more crossover analogy, because, like, to me, you know, once you get into conference play and the tighter the games, you know, these are moments that these kids aren't going to see the field again as the season gets going on down the line. The analogy would be, you know, a good basketball team in the first round of the NCAA tournament lay an 18.5, and they get a 23-point lead with 6 minutes to go, and here comes the bench. And then the other team comes back, and they lose by 15.5. But the reality of it is those kids on the bench in the first game or the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, that's literally their swan song. That's it for them. They're not going to see the court anymore, so the coach throws them a bone and gets them in there. And that's what happens in these bigger spread games where the coach says, here's an opportunity for me to get these guys in, underclassmen, get some work, get a taste of live action so that they got a little experience, and come next year when it's their turn, they got a taste of it. But they're not going to see the field in the back third of the season. So these opportunities still present themselves right out of the gate.
Now, like I said at the top of the segment here, one of my takeaways from week one, and this will be the case in week two as well, there were some sloppy games. Turnovers, mishaps, overthrows, all kinds of stuff, timing issues. You know, you can do as much as possible to simulate game conditions, but you really can't do it until you get out there between the lines in front of those large crowds. That brings me over to the NFL. I know we're talking about professionals versus, you know, 18 to 22-year-old kids, but there are some teams here in the NFL where their first-team offenses have not sniffed the field of gameplay in the preseason. Some quarterbacks that haven't had any timing outside of practice with their receivers. Do you worry about that at all here going into week one of the NFL season?
Certainly. You know, shaking the rust off. Week one, don't overreact. And here's what will happen too, Adam. The numbers in the NFL are more volatile than they've ever been before. It's been like a 2-year thing now where based on the result of a game this Sunday, you'll see a number next week where you just shake your head. And then some properties have numbers up for all week 17, all games, like week two's already up or games throughout the course of the year. And you'll look, and the number that could be up now for a week two game, it could flop 5 points, it could shift favorites, all based on the result of a game. And, you know, we warn everybody, don't overreact to what you last witnessed. And, oh, by the way, week two is the most unique year of the NFL season. And believe me, the players overreact. But know this, teams know that number. If you go 0-2, 87% of the time, you will miss the playoffs. So week two, even though you're sitting, oh, boy, they looked great last week and that other team looked awful. Well, the team that lost that game is coming in here as motivated as they can be and with a sense of urgency and almost playing it like a playoff game because they know their fortunes of making the postseason. The odds are stacked against them if they go 0-2. So week two is always that bizarre week where you get some results, go, wow, I didn't see that coming. Well, it kind of makes sense when you step back and think of that one factor that they know if they go 0-2, you know, they're probably toast at the end of December.
You know, and it's kind of funny here. I mean, obviously legalization and PASPA being overturned is great for everybody. You know, it opens up the market to a lot more operators, a lot more states, a lot more people now have easier access to betting. But when you talk about overreaction, when you talk about, you know, some of the narratives that get created out there in the mainstream media, you know, I saw one beat writer yesterday who tweeted something to the effect of how the Ravens opened -4 in Miami. Now the line's up to as high as -7. And he's considering the Laremy Tunsil and Kenny Stills trade as an adjustment of 3 points to the line. We all know that that's not accurate. If we follow this industry, we know that's not true. Baltimore was taking money before that deal because people liked the Ravens going into the season, liked the Ravens in this matchup against the Miami team that seemed to have no clue what was going on in the preseason. But that misinformation, those narratives are going to be everywhere now with so many outlets invested in gambling coverage. So that's another wrinkle into this equation here where there's going to be a lot of bad information out there, and it's more important than ever for bettors to sort through what actually matters, what's actually accurate against what doesn't matter and what isn't accurate.
Well, the other thing that happens every year, and it's kind of crazy, I mean, what you and I on you know, gatherings like this. We talked about this stuff all summer long. These numbers for week one of the NFL have been up for, what, 8 to 10 weeks? And you saw some slight movement on a handful of games. And then here we get to Tuesday on week one, and you're starting to see numbers dance all over the place. Did that much change, honestly? I mean, did that much change in the last 10 weeks? Okay, Tunzel's gone. All right, the guy's a terrific left tackle. You know, Miami wasn't going to be good to begin with. And now Miami just keeps hearing all week long, you know, how bad they really are. And they're pro athletes. I'm not saying I'm sitting here, you know, running to the window to play Miami. But you know and I know, what do we always say? You know, you're laying double digits in the NFL, you'll go broke. They're pro players. These guys are playing for jobs. And the worst NFL team. I love that discussion, right? That comes out every year. What would the line be if Alabama played the Dolphins? You know, Miami could name the score. You know, I mean, it's a joke. I mean, every year you'll get that topic: the best college team against the scrub NFL team. The worst NFL team could beat them by 50.
Yeah, well, and speaking of 50, Alabama's a 53-point favorite this week against New Mexico State. But anyway, getting back to the NFL here, let's look at Thursday night's game, Green Bay and Chicago. Chicago down to a 3-point favorite pretty much market-wide, and in fact, 3 flat at 5 dimes. Some places 3 minus 15, 5 dimes actually 3 minus 10. And again, I'll look at the offshore market for the most part here because that's still the most available to our listeners of the show, but certainly shop around for the best odds, whether it's a brick and mortar or an offshore, whatever the case may be. But Chicago's down to a 3-point favorite here, and you've got Green Bay and Matt LaFleur didn't really play too much of anybody in the preseason. You've got Matt Nagy, who kind of takes the preseason pretty easy as well. What are you looking for here in this Thursday night game, Brian?
What I'd say to you is, as you alluded to, I think there's a lot of questions. I mean, it's like a blanket thing. I think the Bears with the Mac trade, they got a bounce in their step last year. And I think, I don't know if overachieve is the word, but they kind of escalated the process a little bit. It's like maybe Houston winning the World Series maybe a year before you thought they would. The question is, now you've got the weight of expectations, and do they sustain it? You know, the running game, they like Montgomery. Cohen's a nice weapon. So we'll see what Chicago brings to the table offensively. We know their defense is going to be good. The thing with the Packers, new head coach, and they didn't give Rodgers a lot of help. At least it looks that way on paper offensively. But what they did was invest in the defense. And in a weird way, that is helping Aaron Rodgers and not keeping that Green Bay defense on the field all the time. And in Rodgers is you know, constantly in rally mode. I think the improved defense for the Packers is something I'll be watching, because Rodgers will make anybody look good. You know, he's that good. And we can talk about the soap opera. Does he like the coach and all this? Who cares? Yeah, let's see what they do on the field. These two teams know each other. They hate each other. And the Bears have a good defense. And I think the Packers, with the work they did in the offseason, have a sneaky good defense too. It'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out.
I'm really curious about this game. I won't have any action on it, but I'm very curious to see how the Packers look. I have a pretty good idea of how the Bears are going to look. I think offensively they look pretty good. I think defensively, without Vic Fangio, you know, we could see a drop-off here from this team. Of course, he's now the head coach with the Denver Broncos. And by the way, you know, especially as we look at this Green Bay side of things, Matt LaFleur, a rapid riser in the industry, of course, another branch of the Sean McVay coaching tree, was the OC there in 2017. With Tennessee last year in 2018, I mean, look, Marcus Mariota and the backups who play when he's injured, they're not Aaron Rodgers. We all know that. Tennessee did a very good job running the football. Nathaniel Hackett, also a big upgrade here, going from Jacksonville, where he had Blake Bortles, to now having Aaron Rodgers. But we've got 8 new head coaches, 17 new offensive coordinators, 9 new defensive coordinators in the NFL this year. Green Bay, I don't know what I'm going to get all the way around. Chicago, I have a better idea, but how much does that defense regress without Fangio and with some of the personnel losses? I don't know. This is a game shrouded in question marks for me.
No, I hear you. I think in week one, much the same way that you kind of got that scenario in college football, you kind of want to see, you know, what these teams are going to bring to the table. But I think in the NFL, we have way more information, you know, than we did in college football, at least information maybe to a degree that you believe you can trust. You know, the other thing, you know, you got to take into account now all of a sudden, Bud, is this storm with Jacksonville and Carolina and, you know, their routine during the week. You've got to believe now is going to be disrupted. I know I'm not sure about Carolina just yet, but I believe Jacksonville switched their days off to earlier in the week. Maybe it's not that big a deal in a game of this nature, because for the most part, teams in the preseason start installing the game one game plan throughout the course of the preseason. So maybe it won't be that disruptive, but clearly Carolina and Jacksonville, those players are going to have other things on their mind this week.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And I've talked about this a lot before, and I know you joke with me every time I bring up circadian rhythm, but you know, these players are creatures of habit. You know, they practice at the same times. They eat at the same times. They have a schedule that they're accustomed to. And when you get these deviations, whether it's weather or, you know, some sort of other circumstance, it can be a challenge. Now, at least in week one, you're not fully into your routine as of yet, but still for a team like Jacksonville, as you mentioned, I mean, this storm could be really, really bad there. You know, we don't necessarily know. The forecasters don't even know yet. No, it won't affect the gameplay on Sunday in terms of whether or not the game will be played, but it will affect the preparation period for Jacksonville. They're worrying about moving their families around, getting them inland or whatever else. So, yeah, that's an excellent point to make here about that situation specifically. And look, this probably, I hate to say this, and certainly best wishes to everybody in Florida, Georgia, the Carolinas, this won't be the last one of these that we see threaten the U.S. this year either. So, you know, these are factors you have to consider from a handicapping standpoint, as cold and callous as it seems.
Well, and I'll tell you, you want I don't even know, I can't pronounce it whenever you say it, the what is it?
Circadian rhythm.
Yeah, that thing. I'll give you one to watch, but it's going to be really, really intriguing. And that's the Saints. And we all think the Saints are awesome. But they play the Texans on a Monday night. Then they go cross country, albeit, you know, the Rams have to fly home too because they're playing on the East Coast. But on a short week, they got to go and play the big revenge game against the Rams out on the West Coast. I would envision, I haven't heard anything yet, I'd have to believe they'd be considering staying out there. If they don't, then they're going to fly home and fly up to Seattle. I mean, New Orleans in the first 3 weeks, don't take the Texans lightly, but if they're looking ahead to the big revenge game with the Rams, flying cross country and then have another game up on the West Coast. I've got to believe they stay out West. If they don't, they're walking into a buzzsaw in week three.
Yeah, and these are important spots you want to look at. It's one of the reasons why I'm kind of sour on the Browns for this year, because they played three short week games in the first 5 weeks. They play a couple Monday nights and a Sunday night. And those Sunday night games, you don't think of them as short weeks, but Monday is an absolute waste when you play Sunday night. So, you know, it is still a little bit of a short week. And by the way, there was a weather system in the Gulf of Mexico that was just kind of starting up a little bit. I don't know anything about the forecast for later in the week, but of course, keep that in mind with New Orleans playing Monday night, then having to fly out, you know, a little bit later on in the week. So, you know, all these weather considerations, travel spots, situational spots, that's kind of the hallmark of my NFL handicapping, because unlike college, where there are very clear talent distinctions between two teams, all these guys in the NFL are pros. So I tend to look more at that situational handicapping element, which is what we're already doing here in week one, and that's kind of by design.
Well, yeah, and I mean, we talk about the nightmare that is, you know, teams that have to play on a Thursday night. I mean, that's a joke. The road team is at such a massive disadvantage. But even a Monday night game, like you said, changes your routine slightly. But you know what? more than routine, Adam. I mean, every play out there is a car accident. It's 24 hours left that these guys can recover. I mean, that's the big thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely agree. And people are going to say, well, it's early in the year. They should be fine. But maybe, maybe not. You know, you would like to think everybody is as healthy as they're going to be at this time of the year. But
well,
you know,
look,
that just,
look at the injury report. Look at the injury. These guys, these guys get in throughout 5 weeks of camp. Honestly, camp is harder than the season. I mean, there's like guys all banged up. They've been going running hard, going crazy, you know, for 6 weeks now. It bumps and bruises all over the place. Honestly, once you get into the season, they're all about trying to keep these guys upright. You may not be on the injury report, but probably every guy coming into these games, even though they're not playing in preseason games, they're out there banging away in training camp and practice. These guys are maybe more nicked up now than they'll be in week 7.
Yeah, it's true. A lot of muscle strains and stuff like that. And also, you know, training camp in hot, humid conditions that you don't see during the regular season, all that type of stuff. And, you know, these guys, they get paid for the regular season too. So they're going to be out there as opposed to, you know, some of the stuff that goes on in the preseason. But in any event, a couple more games I want to tackle here with you, Brian. Game 457, 458, Buffalo and the Jets. Jets a 3-point favorite here, but I just mentioned 8 new head coaches, 17 offensive coordinators, 9 defensive coordinators. If you're looking for continuity in week 1, not many teams have more of it than the Buffalo Bills.
Well, full disclosure, right? But I mean, I am objective when it comes to, you know, making money on this stuff. I believe in the Bills. Or I enjoy watching the Bills, but I'm very cautiously optimistic that this is a team can win 9 games this year. This is a game I'm convinced, and said it all summer long, I think 2.5s will pop up. I think money's going to come in on Buffalo, and it flies under the radar. Generically speaking, we'll play the quiz game. I'll pop quiz for you. Okay, the Bills. For them to be successful, what's got to happen?
Josh Allen's got to get better.
Oh, there we go. Okay, great. Okay, you and everybody else, and you're in. That's a big yes. But no one talks about the fact they had the second-ranked defense in the NFL last year. One guy left, Kyle Williams, and they drafted Ed Oliver to replace him. And everybody is back. That defense kept them in every game last year. Josh Allen had a light bulb go off at the end of the year, and he was running around doing it all by himself. Now in free agency, in the draft, they got offensive linemen. They've massively upgraded their wide receivers, the tight end position. This offense should be markedly better, but it's the defense that no one talks about. They're number one in the NFL against the pass last year. I think, honestly, I look at the schedule. I think the Bills win in week 1. They turn around, come play the Giants in week 2, and the Giants game scares the living hell out of me. Because, oh, boy, look, they beat the Jets. Now they're going to play the Giants. But that could be one of those scenarios. If it pans out that way, that would be the Bills feel good about themselves. Giants coming home if they lose to Dallas. Home opener playing it like a playoff game because they can't go 0-2. Don't go nuts with what you watch this week because next week will be a completely different animal. I'm already thinking of I think how the first 2 games play out.
Yeah, and sometimes that's what you need to do here in the NFL. By the way, the Jets, of course, with Adam Gase, the head coach, probably going to call his own plays despite Dowell Loggins being the OC. And then defensive coordinator Greg Williams, who I know very well, lines his safeties up about 25 yards behind the line of scrimmage. So could be a bit of an adjustment period for the Jets in week 1. Brian, one more game I want to touch on here quickly. Sunday Night Football. Steelers, Patriots. Patriots, 5.5, 6-point favorite out there, although some places have gone down as low as 5 on this game. You know, all the talk about the Browns here, I mean, maybe the Steelers a little bit undervalued coming into the season.
Well, I can't wait. Actually, I can because football's just starting, but hockey will be back. In hockey, I am all about running around, trying to find out when are teams having a ceremony? They're retiring a guy's number, or the Blues are going to raise the cup to the banners. And I blindly play the visiting team in the first period and play them in the game, because they come out, warm up, and then they got to stand around and do the stick tap and the ceremony, and the visiting team's chewing on nails. So I always love the road team in ceremony games. For whatever reason, that angle does not work with the Super Bowl champ. But Pittsburgh, to me, is a mission team. I think the Antonio Brown thing, the way that season ended, and now he's out of there, I really think this is a team that's going to kind of circle the wagons a little bit. Roethlisberger's going to a little different approach, quick passes, shorter passes. If Connor runs the ball really well, they've got the burners in Washington and Schuster that can stretch the field. And he's a great player. But in a weird way, I can just envision this at the end of the year, these guys that maybe won't say a damn word all year long, but at the end of the year go, you know, they Antonio Brown is bulletin board material for this Pittsburgh team. I think they're going to have a big year if Roethlisberger stays upright.
Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how can people check out those two shows?
Oh, man, it's going to be a wild week, Adam. Away we go. Sportsbookradio.com. You can go to KSHP.com. Listen live, noon to 2 Pacific time, weekdays. So we got you covered, all the sportsbook directors, both sides of the counter, out on the road doing remotes, football season. We do our watch party Sunday at Sunset Station, hockey parties to come there. It's just the beginning, my friend. It's going to be great.
Yeah, for sure. And, of course, you can check out Brian's videos over on our Bang the Book YouTube page. You can follow him on Twitter as well, at Brian Blessing. Brian, appreciate the time, as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, pal. Have a good one. We'll talk next week.
There you go. There's Brian Blessing again, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, KSHP.com for those. Check him out on our Bang the Book YouTube page as well. Speaking of Las Vegas, time is running out to sign up for the Westgate Super Contest, the Circa Million, the Golden Nugget Ultimate Football Challenge, the William Hill Pick'em, anything else that's going on out there in Sin City. If you live outside of the state of Nevada, you have to have a proxy to join those contests. You can still be in them, but you have to have a proxy to submit your picks for you. Maddie and Tony over at footballcontest.com have done a phenomenal job for us over the last 5-6 years, however long it's been that we've been in the Super Contest. And they will do a great job for you as well. We're going with them again this year. Great to catch up with them a couple weeks ago. But make sure that if you're getting involved in any of those contests out in Las Vegas, Maddie and Tony over at footballcontest.com are our preferred proxy service here on Bang the Book Radio. We got one more guest for this Tuesday edition of the show. That is professional handicapper Rolf Michaels from wagertalk.com. Rolf, how's it going today, man?
Adam, going great. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining me here once again. And let's go ahead and start with some college football. We just finished up with the NFL with Brian. We'll get back to that here at the tail end of this segment with Rolf. But Rolf, week one, observations, thoughts, concerns, questions. What did you see?
Well, you know, a couple of the biggest thoughts, obviously, we had so far this season, we've had 6 teams getting upset as double-digit favorites. They, of course, were Tennessee against Georgia State, Missouri and Wyoming, South Carolina, North Carolina, Purdue, Nevada, Western Kentucky and Central Arkansas, and Arizona and Hawaii. The next thing that caught my eye is there were 4 true freshmen that started this week. Well, those 4 true freshmen went 4-0 straight up, and basically 4-0 against the spread. Boise's Hank Brockmeyer, Auburn's Bo Nix, North Carolina's Sam Howell, and while Arizona State, Jaden Daniels, they didn't get the cover, Kent State scored late. They won and controlled that game. So certainly impressive when, you know, I think we've seen the turn of the page with Lawrence and then what Tua did. Listen, just like these freshmen in basketball that start AAU camps at a crazy young age, these quarterbacks now that grow up to be quarterbacks in their peewee leagues start having trainers at a young age. They are now taught to do things the right way through high school. They have professional people teaching them to take the right steps, and we'll see a change now. I mean, Ohio State played 7 true freshmen. I think Bama played 6 or 7 true freshmen. That's never happened in the past. We've seen now these teams know they're going to lose those players in a few years. They're going to graduate early, most likely. You might as well play them now.
Now, something else that kind of stood out to me here, and I know that some of our friends and some people that we know in the industry did get off to a slow start last week. A lot of games that had sharp line movement went the other way. East Carolina took some money early on. They got blown out by North Carolina State. The Ole Miss-Memphis game, the books got middled on that one. That one came down from 6 to as low as 3.5, back up to 4.5. So, again, the importance of getting the right number there. South Carolina took money. They lost. Virginia Tech took money, threw a couple of key numbers, 2 and 3 and 4, lost that game outright, although they were -4 in turnover margin. You know, we saw several games where the lines got bet up. USC, another one against Fresno State. The lines took sharp action, and the game went the other way. So what do you make of that?
Well, I have a reason for that. And part of it is, you know, a couple of those, you talk North Carolina, South Carolina, that was a freshman quarterback, Sam Howell for North Carolina. I know a lot of people were on Florida State over Boise. Well, you know what? Color me wrong. I was one of those people that was on Florida State and said, well, Boise's got to travel to Florida State. You have the heat and humidity, and now they're playing the game at noon. That's another advantage, and they have a true freshman. Well, guess what? Totally wrong. Boise State was the better team on the field. They were better conditioned. Just crazy that they would run 108 plays on Florida State and come out relaxed. But the thing that caught me by real surprise was this. There were 11 teams this year in college football that returned 17 or more starters. Those teams went 4-6 straight up, 4-5-1 against the spread. There were 13 teams this year that returned 9 or fewer starters. Those teams that returned 9 or fewer starters went 9-4 straight up, 9-4 against the spread. So I think there's an overreaction to the number of starters. There's an overreaction to a true freshman. And several of those games involved fit in both of those categories where teams just played better than expected.
Now, I'm trying to bring this up here because I know that you post a lot of great information over there at wagertalk.com and also on your Twitter feed at CalSportsLV. And I'm kind of looking at it here and, you know, I'm sort of wondering if maybe those teams that didn't return a lot of starters, you know, have newer coaching staffs where maybe they're recruiting at a higher level. But as I'm looking through here at the teams that, you know, didn't return a lot of starters, Texas, they always recruit at a high level anyway. Buffalo was playing FCS Robert Morris. Navy was playing Holy Cross. UAB, I mean, they almost lost that game outright as nearly a 40-point favorite. Kentucky, their recruiting's been roughly the same. Washington, same thing for them. Boston College, same thing. So it's not even like you've got a second or a third-year head coach that's getting rid of the previous coach's recruits. It was just one of those things where those teams just happened to play well.
They did. And I think, again, I think we're seeing now, we're seeing more public money coming into Vegas because of the expanded betting. You know, this is the first year where we now have all these multiple states with college football. Well, you know, just because people are betting in New Jersey and now they're betting in Oregon and they're betting in Iowa and they're betting in these states, those things trickle over to us and the lines are affected by, I think we're seeing more public moves than we have in the past. So it's just something we have to keep an eye on. You know, one thing that I certainly, you know, need to look more at now is your recruiting. And, you know, I started to do a new power rating with how have teams have recruited for the past 2 years. Yes, you may play a few freshmen this year. And yes, there's going to be a handful of freshmen, true freshmen that are an integral part of the game immediately. But looking back at what your recruiting class was last year to see where those kids are and using that to up and down my power rating a little bit moving forward.
Now, speaking of power ratings, did you make any significant adjustments from week one to week two?
Yeah, I made Tennessee. I took Tennessee down 5 and I put Georgia State up 4. You know, if you followed me on Twitter on Saturday, I turned that game on at halftime. And I said, I've only been watching this game for 7 minutes of game time, but Georgia State's the better team on the field. Rarely week one will I make that strong of a move unless I've watched the game. When you saw Tennessee just being disgruntled, when you saw Georgia State, I think they were 8 of 13 or 9 of 13 on third down conversions. That's not a fluke win. Listen, Purdue going to Nevada, you know, you had 470 passing yards. You were minus 5 turnovers. That is a team that should have won the game but got upset. Watching Georgia State, despite them being a 24-point dog, they were the better team on the field. I have no problems making a five downgrade on Tennessee. The other teams that I moved down three were Arizona, Western Kentucky. We talked about getting upset. UAB, you talked about. USC, a little for the loss and an extra point for the quarterback change. Again, USC is a situation where Sears transferred out 5 days ago. You know, had he stuck around another week, boom, he would have been the starting quarterback at USC. Now that he transferred, you're going to who would have been the third string. And Virginia Tech is one of my most disappointing teams. Virginia Tech and Florida State are the teams that, in my mind, I had ranked higher than most, and perhaps I was just a little zealous in my power ratings on them. But watching both of them play, BT played much better in the second half, but they got mauled over in the first half with 10 returning starters on defense and Bud Foster retiring, and this is his last season. It was just baffling to me how bad they played. So those are my biggest changes after week one.
Now, what goes into that process for you? I talked about it yesterday on the show where, you know, I compare to the closing line, then I go through, do a lot of box score study, and then dig like hell to find injury information because it can be tough in college football sometimes. Is that the process that you go through as well?
It is. And, you know, I just want to give a shout out to the NCAA. If you go to the NCAA.org and look at football and then look at their scoreboard, they do decent recaps of games. And often they tell you they were without their top two wide receivers or they missed some offensive linemen in this game. So if you want a quick, easy source to look at scores, I know they don't have lines, obviously, but their write-ups are a little bit different where it's not the ESPN write-up, and they do list some players in there, which is quite helpful. But moving forward, absolutely. You know, like I said, it has to, for me to move a team four or five the first few weeks, I have to have watched that game and know that they passed my eye test. And simply, I don't care what the score ends up being. If I have Tennessee and Georgia State are both equal on the teams, I'm going to make a 5-point adjustment. But when I do, I look at what the line was. I look at what the score was. I look at what the yards were. I look at what the turnovers were. And then basically, you know, after reading the recap, if nothing stuck out to me, I make my adjustment. So, you know, weeks one and two, I normally limit them at three up or three down just because anything can happen early. Teams may have not as gelled as quick and situations happen. Once I get past that and I'm watching games more and I see what happens, I can move a team up to 5 points.
See, it's interesting. I mean, I wasn't too aggressive with my moves. My biggest move was USC down 4 points, largely because of the JT Daniels injury. I didn't move anybody else more than 2.5. So I guess it's sort of kind of that push and pull of you want to make sure that you're adjusting to what you see and what you see in week one, but also, you know, not trying to get rid of all that work you did over the summer.
Agreed. Agreed. Like I said, and the other thing is, I know a lot of people are, if you move one up three, you move them down three. I started this segment by saying I moved Tennessee down five and I moved Georgia State up four. Because, you know, you have to still put in your mind, did Tennessee look past Georgia State? Well, yes, Georgia State was impressive on the field and they beat them and they manhandled them. But there's still that difference with me that Tennessee has that mentality that they lost. So I'm not one that believes the up has to equal the down. I evaluate each team separately inside the game itself when I'm doing the power ratings for the game.
All right, so I do want to go off script for a second here. I did send you over three games I wanted to talk about, but I've had listener requests for a bunch of games this week. I'll try to fit all of them in as time permits here on the show. But we might as well start with game 301-302 here on Friday, Wake Forest and Rice. Wake Forest, 17.5-point road favorite, going down to Houston for this one. When you talk about impressive week one performances, I don't think there's one as stunning as that Rice defense against Army. So I presume you upgraded them a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. You know, they were a 3-point upgrade. You know, now I will say this. I don't know if Army looked past Rice with Michigan on deck. But, you know, I've mentioned this numerous times on the show. The option, no matter who's running it, takes time to get progressed during the season. You look at those good Navy years. You look at, you know, especially, you know, Navy when they were good for those 4 or 5 years. You look at what their rushing was the first 6 weeks of the season compared to the last 6 weeks. The offensive line has to gel. The timing has to get down with the quarterback and the pitches. The O-line has to – the running backs have to be in sync with the O-line when to cut, how they're going to block. And always, again, always, 9 out of 10 times, 99 out of 100 times, an option team, as long as they're healthy, will have much better stats in the end of the year than the beginning. You know, with that said, you know, Wake Forest was a team that you know, went back and forth against Utah State. You can say their defense looked bad, but again, you know, they were going against one of the best quarterbacks in the country in Jordan Love. I think, you know, despite Rice being 6-1 when they're getting 20 points or more, I still lean with Wake in this game. I think Wake's taken it to a new level. You know, Clawson's offense is something that Rice, I don't think, can keep up with scoring. And I think that Wake Forest is a situation that I'm going to be backing this week. I don't know if they'll make my card, but I certainly have a lean this early in the week on them.
Yeah, and this is one of those situations, too, where, you know, again, context matters so much, especially early on in the year. As you mentioned, you know, it takes time for that option to come together. Maybe Rice benefited from that. I certainly don't want to take all the credit away from them, and neither do you. But also here, that was a game against Army with Army had, what, I think 2 possessions of almost 10 minutes. So we didn't get to see just how bad that Rice offense can be. This is a game where maybe we find that out. So that's an important thing here, too, is that when you look at these games with these big time of possession differences or something like that, you know, maybe Rice's better unit is the defense, and they were out there most of that game. Maybe Rice's offense is terrible. Their offense is going to have to be out there here this week against Wake Forest, and as you just mentioned, they may not be able to keep up. So you've got to apply context in that regard, too, as you study the box scores.
Yeah, you know, and the thing to remember as well is time of possession is one thing, but Army only ran 44 plays last week. Wake Forest is going to seem like the fastest team in football compared to a defense that was only on the field for 44 plays last week. So you also have to throw tempo into that where you had a very rested Rice. Yes, Rice was on the field for 38 minutes, but when you're on the field, and I don't know the 38 minutes just off the top of my head. I'm just guesstimating some amount of time. When you're on the field for almost 66% of the time, but you're only on the field for 44 plays, that is so much different than a Florida State defense that was on the field 66% of the time, and I think was on the field for 108 plays. So put Florida State's defense on the field for 108 plays, put Rice's defense on the field for 44 plays, you're going to have a bit of tiredness level between those two.
Yeah, Rice was on the field 34-51 in that game. They had 8 passing attempts, 56 rushing attempts for 231 yards. So, you know, again, as you said, Wake Forest is going to play with a much, much quicker tempo. So that'll definitely be one to keep an eye on there. And I agree with you. I mean, I think if I had to do anything, I'd look for Wake Forest to have some fun offensively. And not to get off on a tangent or anything, but I was surprised with Utah State. I really thought Gary Anderson would neuter that offense, would take it out of the hands of Jordan Love, and he really didn't. I have to give him credit for that. I did upgrade Utah State as a result, may continue to upgrade them as we go forward here, because I expected Gary Anderson, kind of an old school, I want to run the football sort of dude to kind of ruin that Utah State offense. But at least for 1 week here so far, he didn't do that.
Well, yeah, you know, to be honest, how many options did he really have? The team returned two offensive starters, Jordan Love and their left tackle. So if you have maybe the best player in the Mountain West back and no one else on offense, I think your hands are pretty much tied what you can do with that team. Now, they proved that, again, another situation where two offensive starters, yet they went wire to wire with Wake Forest and were in that game. So, you know, again, times have changed, and people have to look at returning production, I think, as much as returning starters.
All right, so let's go to Saturday here, and this is another one by listener request, although I happened to send this one to you last night anyway. Game 313-314, Vanderbilt and Purdue. Purdue, 7.5-point favorite, pretty much market-wide for this one, down from the 9-9.5 range where it opened. So you agree with this line move here, Rolf?
I do. You know, I have it power rated at 6. So obviously, you know, it's closer to my number. You know, I will say this. I looked up what teams do, what favorites do after losing by a touchdown more favorite, and then they're at home the next week. And those teams that lost as a favorite or more and then at home since 2000 are only 5-16 against the spread, 24%. Purdue fits in that range. Tennessee fits in that range. So I think a lot of times people say, well, my gosh, this team lost as a big favorite. Now they're a favorite again. There's no way they can lose again. And I think you get an overreaction. Well, we haven't quite seen that in this line, but, you know, Purdue blew two 17-point leads. They've got a lot of pressure on them with TCU on deck. You know, their DC was up in the press box for the first time. I don't know if he will after Nevada had two 90-yard fourth-quarter TD drives. And Vanderbilt impressed me. I mean, their defense kept in with Georgia. Yes, they, you know, they got beat handily. But, you know, I think this Vandy team is going to be able to move the ball on Purdue. You have your quarterback, Riley Neal, who's coming back to his home state. Obviously, he's a grad transfer from Ball State. You have your running back, Keshawn Vaughn. He had 180 yards for Illinois against Purdue before he transferred here, and he's going to be playing. So he knows he's had success in that. You have Purdue that was 0-4 as a home favorite last year. You know, I am not decided what team I like, but talking it through, I have many more check marks towards the Vanderbilt side than I do the Purdue side.
I've got this one lined 8.5. I did adjust Purdue down a little bit after last week because, look, I mean, that's not a game you're supposed to lose. And I understand that maybe it was in fluky fashion, but you had that lead. You had that game in hand. That's a bad look for Jeff Brohm and especially Nick Holt. So, you know, Nick Holt's a guy that I do really, really love, and he just hasn't performed well at Purdue. You know, last year they regressed. This year it seems like, you know, who knows, maybe they'll regress a little bit more. But, you know, Vanderbilt is – they're such a tough team to figure out because they're outgunned in every conference game. They just are. They just don't have the same talent, except for when they play Kentucky. They just don't really have the same talent as all the other teams in the East and certainly not the teams in the West. They have no home field advantage to speak of whatsoever. But when they leave the SEC and when they go out on the road, and most of their home games feel like road games anyway, I think you got to give them some respect, you know, because they do play pretty competitively in the SEC. I think Derek Mason doesn't get enough credit for the job that he does there at a place where it's very, very tough to recruit because Vanderbilt has high academic standards. I give Vanderbilt a lot of respect just naturally when they go on the road and play non-conference games. So even though I'm at 8.5, even if this line keeps coming down, I don't think I'm interested in going against Vandy.
Yeah, well, again, you know, that's a situation where Franklin ruined it for all the next head coaches, you know, doing what he did, turning that program around. You know, jumping back to you downgrading Purdue, I dropped them down a little bit, but, you know, when I look at a team that had a 519 to 404 yard edge, you know, the reason they lost is simple. You were minus 5 turnovers. I tweeted out last week, Hawaii won the game. Hawaii had 6 turnovers week 1 against Arizona, and they won the game. If you have five or more turnovers, you've won 1.8% of the games, you know, in the last 30 years. So when you're minus five, that's the reason you lost the game, plain and simple. Turnovers is something that normally doesn't carry over. Yes, a team can start to get into bad habits, and yes, they can have a running back that turns the ball over. But I downgrade a team quite a bit less when it's a turnover situation. I mean, Sindelar did have two picks, so, you know, that's something you have to look at with the quarterback. But again, just a different opinion when it's a turnover, when it's a turnover game like that game was.
Yeah, I only downgraded Purdue a point. And you know, maybe I underestimated the difference from Blau to Sindelar, because Sindelar played almost all of 2017. So this isn't a guy who's coming out there with, you know, no experience. He threw for a lot of yards, made some bad decisions. We'll see. I mean, Purdue was maybe a team I was a little bit high on coming into the season just because I like Brohm and Holt. So maybe I'm trying to correct to the market now. But again, a team to watch very closely here as we go forward, because those middle-of-the-road teams generally tend to be the ones with the most value if you can pinpoint when they're going to play well, play poorly, or if you can pinpoint ahead of the market whether they're going to drop off or get better. So we'll see how things play out with Purdue as we go forward here. But let's go to game 369-370. We had some signature games in week one. I think this is the only one of week two. LSU and Texas. LSU from a 4.5-point favorite to now a 5.5-point favorite going to Austin.
Again, we have an overreaction from everyone seeing, oh, Texas is so bereft at running back depth. They lost another running back. You know, their second string running back is going to be someone who was a quarterback. Their third string running back is going to be someone that was a wide receiver. But no matter how much I like LSU, and I do like LSU a lot this year, and, you know, I've talked on the show that if they were hosting Alabama this year instead of going to Bama, I would have bet them to win the SEC just as a long shot. I think they have a defense that's going to withstand be one of the best in the SEC. I think their offense is going to be exciting. But again, I simply can't. There's very few times where an angle is going to stop me from betting a game. But Tom Herman as a dog is going to stop me from betting LSU. 8-2 as a dog at Texas, 13-2 as a head coach of Houston and Texas. It goes back to, I think, 21-2 back at the Ohio State and Iowa State days when Tom Herman's a dog on the team. They're 21-2. So yes, that is going to stop me. You know, I did mark that I like the over in this game. With the running back, with the running back issues, Ellinger is going to have to take control and pass the ball. I know LSU is going to press the pace and pass the ball. I know LSU is going to run 88 to 90 plays, even more. I know that forces the other team most likely to press the tempo. I think with the total at 55, it's going to be one of my top plays this weekend.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, look, it's hard enough to run on LSU when you're healthy, let alone when you're not. So you are better off with Ellinger, who's, you know, also a mobile quarterback in his own right, can extend some plays, maybe get a few yards as opposed to, you know, some of those negative plays, stuff like that. So could make things a little bit easier for Texas on third down, third and long type situations. Look, my number was 4 on this game. I'm not necessarily surprised to see it moving away from my number. I won't take either side in this one, though. Again, as you mentioned, you really have to respect what Tom Herman has done as a dog. The thing of it is, how good is Texas? I mean, you know, last year they had Oklahoma on the ropes in the Big 12 title game. They beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, a game that Georgia really had no interest in being in. What is Texas? I think we find out this week. And one thing I will say, and I saw somebody I very much respect talking about this on Twitter, if you are high on LSU, go ahead and take them to make the college football playoff or win the college football playoff before this game. Because if they win this game, get that top 10, top 15 type of win on the road, no less, that really strengthens their playoff resume. Even with a loss to Alabama, they could still find their way into the college football playoff discussion, depending on what else happens nationally. So if you're really high on LSU, now's the time to get that playoff price, because it's gone if they win this game.
You could probably say that for both teams.
That's true.
Because Texas,
yeah, you're right.
Texas could be the exact same situation. You know, yes, you have Oklahoma, and yes, you may have Oklahoma twice, but hey, if you win this game and you lose to Oklahoma, then you're the one that may have revenge in the Big 12 championship. So, hey, it may be one that you want to take a flyer on either side.
All right, so let's go to game 383-384 here in the ACC, Miami and North Carolina. And this is a hard one for me. You've got the line 6 out there in the market right now with Miami, a road favorite in Chapel Hill. Look, you can say North Carolina won the game. You can say South Carolina gave the game away. Now we kind of find out why Jake Bentley was so bad in the fourth quarter playing on a broken foot. Credit to North Carolina. Credit to Jay Bateman. Credit to Sam Howell, the freshman quarterback. Then you've got a Miami team that hasn't played in 2 weeks. So what do we do with Miami here? Because I don't know what they're going to look like. You get so excited to get back to playing. You do all that preparing. You lose a close game to Florida that maybe you should have won. They didn't have to sit on it for 2 weeks. So how do you break this one down, Rolf?
Well, I understand Bentley was hurt, but you still had a true freshman quarterback against a South Carolina defense who put up two 90-yard drives in the second half. Hats off to them. I saw the North Carolina's O-line better than South Carolina's D-line. I saw North Carolina's D-line better than South Carolina's O-line. I mean, North Carolina had 3 sacks. They had 7 TFLs. And their defense is very experienced. I mean, last year the defense was just on the field so much that they just got run over late. But this defense for North Carolina returns 9 upperclassmen and plays 2 sophomores. So to me, I have North Carolina up quite a bit. Then I look at Miami. You know, I was on Miami week 1. Yes, their defense impressed me. Yes, their offense didn't. Miami was still Miami, though. 14 penalties, 118 yards. You know, going through the early look at this game, you know, I am looking at the under. You have North Carolina. You have a total of 49 right now. You have a North Carolina team that ran the ball 52 times and passed 24 against South Carolina. And, you know, I think it's a situation where you're now at home. You are excited. All the students picked up their tickets. Last year, only in the opener did all their students pick up all their tickets for the game. The alum are buying tickets. Mack Brown has brought back excitement. Obviously, a win against South Carolina changes all that. You know, right now, North Carolina is looking at, wow, we beat South Carolina, we beat North Carolina, and then we go to Wake, and then we have App. We could be 4-0 against Clemson. This team has talent. You know, I give them credit. They return 14 starters, 7 on both sides of the ball. Des Newsom, to me, could be an all-ACC wide receiver with Sam Howell throwing to him. You had multiple guys rush for 70-plus yards, including Javonte Williams for 100-plus. I think North Carolina can grind the ball against anyone right now. I think Miami showed us that they can stop the ball, and they're going to still struggle with a young quarterback on offense. And, again, I hate to give another opinion on a total and not a side, but I certainly have a couple unders marked on this game as I continue to do work this week.
Yeah, I don't blame you. And you know, we thought this North Carolina defense would get better under a guy like Jay Bateman, and it did, and it has, and it should continue to as this season goes along. And, look, the chief problem with Larry Fedora was he couldn't win games and his team couldn't stay healthy. He's a very good recruiter. He has been at every single stop he's been at. So, yeah, this is a North Carolina team that has talent, and they do opt to go the true freshman route at quarterback. And, you know, I mean, hey, obviously they think that he's the kid for them, and nobody over the last couple of years at the quarterback position, you know, showed that he was worth holding on to the job. So I agree with you, though. I think the under is the way to go here in this game. And, you know, it does kind of make you think about laying the big number with Miami. Do you want to do that in a game that you expect to be low scoring? And you always want to factor these things into the equation. If you're looking at a low scoring game, naturally your inclination should be to look at the dog. If you're looking at a higher scoring game, then it doesn't necessarily matter as much. So something for our listeners to keep in mind here as we head into week 2.
Adam, one more note on this game. And more often than not, people think about it week 4. But that first conference game, you are really playing closer to the vest than you would if you were playing a non-conference foe. So with this being their conference opener, you know, you don't want to have those young quarterbacks make the mistakes. The game has twice the value as it does in other games. You want to run the ball. You want to be a bit more conservative. You're not going to do those fake punts that you might have done as a big dog against a non-conference foe. You know, like we saw Miami, a couple gambling plays. So to me, with it being the ACC opener for both, it adds a little more credence to that under.
Well, I guess that's one other good point to ask you about, and then we'll talk NFL for a couple of minutes to finish up here. We had some ACC games last week. We had Boston College and Virginia Tech. We had Virginia and Pitt. We had Georgia Tech and Clemson. And then we had Georgia and Vanderbilt. Those were your conference games last week. Those teams now go out of conference. And I was looking, for example, William & Mary in Virginia on Friday night, no less. William & Mary getting 34.5 at Five Dimes, the only book with that number posted. I don't see how I could ever take Virginia in that spot. You know, you look at a team coming off of a conference game, going and playing an FCS opponent, that's a really, really challenging spot to be in. Georgia's laying 49 against Murray State. They may just overwhelm Murray State, but that's kind of intriguing here. Some of these teams that play these conference games or maybe play a really good FBS game like Louisville and Notre Dame, Louisville hosts Eastern Kentucky on Saturday. Very quick turnaround for them. There's some tough situational spots this week for teams that played conference or FBS opponents last week.
Well, you add in that the Virginia offense, yes, they looked good on paper scoring 30 points, but they only had 310 yards and they only rushed the ball for 3.9 yards per carry. William & Mary, a pretty good FCS team. And most importantly for Virginia, is yes, it's your season, it's your home opener, but you have Florida State on deck. So it's very rare to have this big of a sandwich game week two of the season when you are in an ACC sandwich. Again, not an occurrence that happens very often. The ACC and the SEC schedule a couple games early. So normally, you know, when you get to November and the SEC is playing the SoCon, everyone talks about those sandwich games. Oh my God, this is they're in an SEC sandwich against a SoCon team. There's no way they're gonna cover this game. But people don't talk about it now when it's week two, when they should, because it's just as important and it's bigger. It's probably a bigger sandwich game because Virginia knows, boom, we got a conference win already. Florida State lost to Boise. It's a great time to play, and we got another opportunity to win a conference game next week. And then you talk about Virginia's situation after Florida State. They host Old Dominion with a road game at Notre Dame on deck. So you're going to have a sandwich spot and then another sandwich spot in 2 weeks for the Cavaliers.
And very important to be looking for these. We got a handful of conference games here again this weekend as well. So keep that in mind as we head into week three. But Rolf, we'll finish up on the NFL side of things here today. The NFL, of course, begins on Thursday night, Packers versus Bears. Whole menu of options Sunday, two Monday night games, Houston, New Orleans, Denver, Oakland. So in terms of the NFL here, you know, look, I mean, we saw a lot of teams in the preseason not play anybody. Are you shying away from playing those teams that didn't really get their work in the exhibition period?
No, I think the Rams proved it with McVay last year that no matter who you play, listen, the teams actually got more work this year than any other year. Why? Because there were so many scrimmages between the teams. Listen, I've done preseason for, 20 years at North Coast Sports and followed it very closely. Never before this year do I remember teams scrimmaging each other before week number one. You might have one scrimmage against one team before week number two or week number three. There were some teams that scrimmaged multiple teams before week one, multiple teams before week two, and then another team before week three. Every player, every coach, and every GM will tell you, when I can watch my ones go against their ones in a scrimmage that I'm controlling, I get so much more out of it than a preseason game. So no, don't worry about preseason at all. I don't think it affects one thing.
And as we look at week one here, I mean, these lines have been up since, I believe, mid-May. I think CG Technology came out with really all the weeks in mid-May, weeks 1 through 16, or weeks 2 through 16. I think week one had already been up, but these have been up forever. We're starting to see some movement out there now. Now that limits have increased on game week, we're starting to see some of the deeper pocketed individuals or groups out there starting to whack away at this marketplace a little bit. But what's Rolf Michaels' approach to week one, knowing that these lines have been out there for, you know, upwards of 4 months?
I'm pretty conservative in the NFL week one, just like I am in college. And, you know, no matter what you think you know, and no matter what you've studied, the players on the field still are don't always come out the way you think they're going to. So I am one that I think I'm better taking what teams have done and the reactions and betting on teams after I see them live. So there's a few games I like. You know, there are a couple situations, Adam, that, you know, if you guys aren't following me on Twitter, these are all things that I tweeted out this week, just FYI, at CalSportsLV. I do want to remind our listeners or tell our listeners that week one, division dogs are 17-4-1 against the spread. That's a pretty strong number. Why? Well, you look at so many people have power ratings from the preseason moving forward, and teams get adjusted, and, you know, most people have the mentality that almost everyone gets better. You know, this team is up this much, and this team is up, and this team improves, and very few teams go down in the preseason. But when you talk about division games week one, you have to tighten those parameters. You have to tighten those lines from your power ratings. These teams play each other twice. They're a little more conservative, just much like a conference game. So week one division dogs, 17-4 against the spread. And then I wanted to look at how teams do when you're on the road and you had 4 or 5 wins last year. So you were a poor team. You were either 4-12 or 5-11. Week one, if you're on the road, those teams have gone 14-3-1 against the spread. Those teams this year are San Francisco and the New York Giants. If you look at the opposite spectrum, teams last year that finished with 9, 10, or 11 regular season wins on the road week one, you're 13-23-2 against the spread. Those teams, Tennessee, Pittsburgh, Indy, Baltimore, and Houston. So again, not a reason just to play on these teams, but it just shows you the overreaction. We know from top to bottom the NFL is maybe a 17-point league. When you're talking from 4 wins to 9 wins, that's only a 2-game difference where a turnover here or a special teams touchdown could have changed the way. So those teams are much closer than people think. 4-5 wins, 14-3 against the spread. Teams that went 9, 10, or 11 wins, 13-23-2 in week number one.
Excellent insight, as always, here from Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at WagerTalk.com. Rolf, what's going on over there at WagerTalk right now?
Well, again, for those that don't know, WagerTalk has now acquired the Gold Sheet. We now own the Gold Sheet. We've got a special there at WagerTalk.com. And while we bought the Gold Sheet, everything is the same as last year. Bruce Marshall is still writing. Gary Olshan's still writing. Everyone that wrote for him last year, complete continuity, just under our umbrella now. Baseball, we're not talking baseball, but I still do the daily first pitch. There's a lot of value, and perhaps some people say there's more value in baseball when football starts because they're not looking at those lines so close. And starting next week in college football on Monday, I'll bring back the Gridiron Guide. It's a one-page sheet on each team. It gives you the game-by-game logs, gives you ATS and over-under records in multiple categories for both teams going back each of the last 3 years. And then, you know, again, there's a lot of stuff on Twitter, at CalSportsLV, that you want to make sure you stay tuned to.
For sure. Rolf is one of the best resources here in this business. Lots of great free information. Of course, premium picks over at WagerTalk.com as well. And this very segment right here on Bang the Book Radio. So, Rolf, really appreciate your time and insight as always. Thank you so much, man, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Adam.
There you go. There's Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at WagerTalk.com, at CalSportsLV on Twitter. Coming up on Wednesday, we'll do this all over again, chatting some college football and some NFL. We'll be joined by Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at WagerTalk.com, and also Wes Reynolds, VSiN host and contributor to the Point Spread Weekly. Thursday, Brad Powers. Friday, our week one super contest segment. Then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.